Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5, Patriots Playbook. 51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL season.
Stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And now... here's John Roy.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
So we have to come back out and do this again today? I mean, everything that I've heard over the course of the last 48 hours, or almost 48 hours, since this Patriots football team finished dispatching the Dallas Cowboys 48-27 on Sunday in Big D, everything I've heard is that the season's over, hand them the trophy, hand them the championship, it's all done, nobody can keep up with them, nobody can play with them, nobody's going to beat them. But isn't this why we play the games? I mean, I realize that, and what we were just talking about with the PFW guys, I realize that this is a... This is a time in the history of this franchise that all Patriots fans should revel. You should want this time right now to just not go away. You should want to just sit and, as my father used to tell me, you should just want to sit and wallow in it like a pig in slop. It's great stuff. You need to enjoy the moment or the moments as they continue to come along week after week after week, because this is as close to a one-season juggernaut as you may ever see in the NFL. And the fact that you're getting this done in the current day and age of free agency and salary caps and in a different way of doing business in professional sports, much less professional football, it's going to go down in the record books, and people are going to look back on this season if this Patriots team goes where we think it can go. And certainly it now has shown us that they are capable of getting there. But if it goes this way, then this will be a season like maybe we'll never come across our paths again. And certainly I'm talking about, 16-0/19-0/ Super Bowl championship again. Based on what we saw on Sunday. I mean, if the Cowboys are what the NFC has to offer, then there's really only one team left on this schedule that even poses a threat. And I think we all know that comes up on November the 4th. And I say that really with all due respect to Miami this weekend and all due respect to Washington the next weekend, and with all due respect to, you know, Pittsburgh and Baltimore, who are more than capable opponents on the schedule on down the line. Fact is that if the Patriots play like they played on Sunday against Dallas, nobody's going to beat them. Nobody is going to beat them. And I still don't believe, and I'm sure that many of you will concur and probably have already mentioned as such, I still don't believe the Patriots played their absolute best game on Sunday. I think they left a lot on the table. Certainly defensively, I think that there were some moments that they could improve upon. Offensively even, although you can't argue with the 48 points, how could you argue with that? I mean, you're hanging almost half a hundred on people. That's like college football, you know? It's scary. If this team ever does play the complete perfect game, which it may invariably take to beat the Colts in a couple of weeks, but if they ever do put it together, it won't be pretty. And you have to think that at some point in time this season, there's going to be an ugly game, and it will be very lopsided, and that the only way that the Patriots lose a game this year is if they lose the game. The other team won't win it. Does that make sense to you? Patriots shoot themselves in the foot with, you know, a 12 turnover game like the Cowboys, a 12 penalty game like the Cowboys had on Sunday. Granted, the Cowboys contributed to their demise. Yes, the Patriots were impressive, but the Cowboys contributed to their demise on Sunday with the penalties. It consistently thwarted, stopped drives. So while the Patriots were impressive, I know that there's still talk down the hallway over how we can get better as a football team. We left a lot out there. They put 48 points up on the board, and my guess is they probably think we should have put up 62. I'm guaranteeing you that's the way they think. We should have put up 62. And we shouldn't have given up 27. You know, obviously the offense gave up one of those, but the defense gave up, what, 20? You know, I'm thinking that the defense is probably thinking we gave up about 10 too many. So there's still work to improve upon. But I am beginning to join the club now of the only way the Patriots lose is if they lose the game, if they shoot themselves in the foot. I don't know that there's another team capable on the schedule this season that can do it, with the exception of Indy. Now, granted, Indianapolis is still eminently qualified offensively. They're still somewhat susceptible defensively. But sometimes you can mask a little bit of that playing on the home field. If this game on November the 4th were going to be here in Foxborough, no contest. Patriots should be favored probably by at least 10, probably win the game by 2 touchdowns or more. That's my thought. In Indy, this will probably be the only game all year that the Patriots won't be a favorite. I do not think that they'll be favored in that game, as impressive as it has been thus far to a 6-0 start. I don't think they'll be favored. I think initially the nod will go to the defending champs, and maybe it should go that way. Maybe you should hope and you should wish for it to be that way. Maybe that's what will motivate this team. Although I just don't know how much more motivation this team needs. They seem to self-motivate anytime they need it, and at any point that they need it, they seem to come up with a self-motivation. These guys are remarkable. It is a unique collection of talent and individuals and guys with willpower and professionals. It's a collection of individuals, coaches, players, staff, that could easily be called once in a generation. I mean, you know, when you think of the great teams and the pantheon of NFL history, you're thinking, obviously, you know, the Chicago Bears, you know, of the early, you know, of the 30s and 40s. But in recent memory, you're going with the Green Bay Packers of the 60s. The Pittsburgh Steelers of the 70s, the San Francisco 49ers of the 80s, the Dallas Cowboys of the 90s, and you got to throw the Patriots right in there in the 2000s. This is the Pats' decade, and they're going to stamp it their decade should they win at least one more, if not two more. And who's to say if they don't keep the nucleus of this team together, they can't, you know, win a couple of more before we turn the corner on another decade? This team seems to have the pieces of the puzzle in place. And I really believe they've turned the corner in a lot of ways, because I know that, you know, a lot of the negative publicity over Spygate will continue to linger it'll continue to linger for the rest of the year. And it will be a focal point, believe you me, if the Patriots are fortunate enough to get to Super Bowl week, it'll be a focal point. They will be talking about it. You can just count on it. Please count on it, and don't act surprised when it happens, because it will. But when you have a guy like Chris Collinsworth, who, you know, seems to be as anti-patriot an analyst, and I put my finger quotations around the word analyst, because I use that term relatively loosely with him, because I think he has an agenda. And again, this is just my own personal opinion. I don't happen to know that he has an agenda, but I surmise that he does. But when he turns around on Sunday night this week and he says on national television the Patriots are the greatest team, he used that word, the greatest team in the NFL, then I think what you've done is you've got people who are even haters waving the white flag. Now, that doesn't mean that there won't be criticism, and it doesn't mean that everybody's going to jump on the bandwagon and we're all going to ride that Patriot train to Arizona coming up in February. No, that's not necessarily the case. There will always be detractors. There will always be the other side, and nobody is going to just jump on the train willingly. But what it does say is that, you know, talent wins out over everything else. You can complain. You can argue. You can present, you know, facts as they appear. Or even as they not appear. I mean, you can do all the complaining and all the, you know, accusations for the Patriots that you want. The bottom line is this team has talent more than anybody else in the league this year. This team has coaching for that talent, perhaps more than anybody else does on any other team this year. They've got depth, which means they have an abundance of this said talent, more than any other team in the league this year. And when you add these three things together, with desire, with hunger, with the absolute hell-bent for lever attitude that I'm going to win a ring, you know, from a few choice individuals, and I think you probably know who we're speaking of on this Patriots football team, then, frankly, you're stacking the deck against the rest of the league. Bill Simmons said on his column on ESPN.com, he said, the Patriots are sending an X-rated message to the rest of the NFL. You know, and Bill Simmons, who I know many of you know as the former Boston sports guy and now syndicated by ESPN.com,
go f*** yourself.
Yeah, I don't like a lot of his stuff. I'm not in tune to a lot of the way that he goes about doing things. But there are a lot of things that I do agree about with, and that's the job of a columnist. You're not supposed to agree with everything a columnist says. And so I think in that respect, he's definitely doing his job. But I think he's hit the nail on the head here. He's absolutely hit the nail on the head here when he says the Patriots are sending an X-rated message to the rest of the NFL. I don't know, maybe you saw the column. But, right off the top, just briefly, I won't read the whole thing here, but he says, right after Junior Seau's interception clinched the Patriots' 48-27 victory in Dallas on Sunday, my BlackBerry vibrated with a six-word text from my friend Willie. Quote, here comes the FU touchdown. And guess what? It happened when Kyle Echol took it home with 19 seconds to go in the game on a 4th-and-1. Now, first of all, I realize that there are a lot of people, if you're going to criticize, will say Patriots should have done the sportsmanlike thing and take a knee. Well, you're not going to take a knee inside somebody's 5-yard line because, frankly, that's more of an insult than anything else. I really don't think so. I don't think that you would have taken a knee there because that's like saying, ha-ha, that's rubbing your face in it. To me, as a competitor, if I'm on the other side of the line of scrimmage and you're taking a knee on that instance, I'm kind of like, what, you don't think I can stop you? You're not going to kick a field goal there because then you're just scoring points to score points. You got to run the play. And you gave the ball to the right guy because Kyle Echol had never scored a touchdown in the NFL. Kyle Echol wasn't on this team during summer camp. Kyle Echol may not be on another NFL team if it weren't for the Patriots. But he had a chance to score for himself, and he had a chance to do what we so rarely get in New England, and that is the FU touchdown. And we got one on Sunday. You know, what Bill Simmons says, he says, normally you take a knee there, but not this year. Back in the mid-80s, every time the Celtics walked off an opposing floor after a hard-fought victory on the road, a giddy Kevin McHale clenched his fists, raised his Frankenstein arms above his head, and showed off his victorious armpits. This was the hairy victory cigar of the Bird era. Maybe the 2007 Patriots don't have anything as magical as McHale's pits, but they do have the FU touchdown. It's their little way of telling the other 31 teams, you took shots at us after the Jets game, you discredited our 3 Super Bowls, you pretended we were the only team stealing opposing signals when everyone else does it, so you know what? F you. Enough said. And so the Cowboy game, in its sense, is the F you game. That's what it is. And I apologize for being somewhat flip here and maybe somewhat vulgar. This is the internet after all, but we do try to have a little bit of comportment and such, and I think everybody understands what it is that I'm saying around here. Right, Gary?
He's talking about freaking Skype like it's the last... Excuse me.
You're clean.
Thanks. We don't have a dump button here, nor do we have the... Well, we do have the ability to bleep out, you know, Fred's little transgression, but nevertheless... Cowboy game was the FU game. It's just the way it is. And Kyle Echol's touchdown, the FU touchdown, and that's the way to just tell the rest of the league to shut up. Just take it. Take your punishment like a man. So that's where we are. This is where we're standing after 6 weeks. This team is undefeated. There probably aren't too many of you that thought that they wouldn't be undefeated after this stage. I mean, maybe you thought that they would stub a toe, I don't know, somewhere. Dallas would certainly have to be one of those possibilities because it was a road game. But I'm going to venture a guess and say the overwhelming majority of you already thought this team would be 6-0 after 6 weeks. In fact, I'm going to guess and say the overwhelming majority of you figure this team to be 8-0 going into Indianapolis. And there's probably a majority of you still who feel like 9-0 going into the bye week after Indy, based on what you've seen thus far. So, you know, where does this leave us for this week's game? We will spend this week talking about Miami. A lot of the focus will be on how far they've fallen. They are 0-6. But, I, for one, do not feel overly confident in Sunday's game. Reason being, if you've been a Patriots fan for any length of time, you understand that South Florida has always been a trouble spot for this franchise. No matter how good the relative strengths or how bad the relative weaknesses are of the respective teams. It's always been a trouble spot. Sure, the Patriots have won there. But, yeah, they've also lost some games there that they should have won in the past. Now, again, this year is different, and I've already spent the first 15 minutes of this program, 20 minutes of this program, saying that this year is different. And it's pretty clear, even to the uninitiated, even to the non-football, even to the non-Patriot fan, this year is different. Because what you have is a Patriots team that's pulling people up by the scruff of their neck, by their shirt collar, and basically punching them in the nose. You know, they're just reaching out, grabbing someone by the shirt collar, pulling them up to them, and bop, right in the nose. That's exactly what this Patriots football team is doing to the rest of the NFL. And that doesn't mean that at some point in time, one of those people that this team pulls up by the shirt collar isn't going to strike back. Dallas, for the first time, at least took a swing this past week when they took the first lead against the Patriots in the second half. And, of course, then the Patriots go right down and score and never look back, and they outscore the Cowboys after they took a lead 20-3 down the stretch in the last quarter and a half. That was a significant turning point, and it just shows you that this Patriots team can flip the switch and turn it on physically and mentally when they want to, and that's the real scary part about this football team. That's the real scary part. That's you don't see that much. Think back to other Patriots teams. Think back to other teams that you've been a fan of or that you've watched play over the years in the NFL. Think back to teams, college teams even. You don't see too many teams where they can just flip a switch and turn it on and win like that and perform like that. This is a rarity. And because it is a rarity, this is why I would encourage you, as a fan, as a follower, as an observer, to enjoy what we have. And again, put the blinders on, go week to week, join the guys down the hallway in exactly what they're going to be doing, and that is going to be focusing on Miami. And while you can have a little giddy fun, I think, looking down the line and saying, hey, what about Indy and what about the Pittsburgh Steelers and what about maybe even the Baltimore Ravens and do we have a shot at maybe getting to Dallas or something again in the Super Bowl? You can do that as a fan. But just realize now that, you know, nobody in the hallway is going to join you. And realize that you don't want to get to February too quickly because you want to savor every last second of this season that you can. If you're just in an all-fire hurry to get to February and turn the clock up and let's get to the playoffs, then you're just not enjoying football. Enjoy this. Revel in it. And again, as my dad said, wallow in it like a pig in slop because you just won't get too many more chances if you ever get another chance like this as a fan, as a follower, as an observer. You won't get too many more chances like this. Jason's in Florida joining us today. Good afternoon, Jason. How are you?
Good afternoon. Great. What a great game. I agree with you that we should all enjoy this for what it is, and I think the players are enjoying it. And am I the only one who thinks that Tom Brady looked a little bit under duress there in the first half until he got into a good rhythm?
Well, I don't know that he was so much under duress is that I think that the Dallas Cowboys were actually doing some things defensively to cause him some consternation. I think the Cowboys put, pretty good pressure on him. You know, not only with their front four, but, you know, with the occasional time blitz that caused him to rush. And, I mean, he was sacked three times in the game, which met the total of the first five games all combined. So I think you got to give the Cowboy defense more credit than anything else. But the Patriots were able to pick up on that. And like I said, they were able to take care of it. They made, you know, the adjustments they needed to. They sprinted Brady out a couple of times. He was able to, you know, as the phrase that we like to use around here is dink and dunk. You know, he dumped some off short. You know, he was able to find Welker underneath. And I still don't think Dallas has tackled Wes Welker to this point. And here it is Tuesday. So, you know, the problem is that, you know, if you're a good defense, and I think Dallas is a good defense, and I think they're an improving defense, I think Dallas will get better. But you're not going – it's like the Dutch boy trying to put a finger in the dike. You know, at some point in time, you're going to run out of fingers, and there are going to be more leaks that are going to spring. And that's exactly how I think Sunday unfolded.
Yeah, I think the Patriots are in a very rare circumstance here, and it's truly magnificent to watch, where Belichick has them competing against themselves. And you don't really see that often. It's always worth sizing up against that team. And to sit there and watch a team who hasn't, which I agree with you, who isn't firing on all cylinders yet, to be truly perfecting themselves and competing against themselves, it's just a wonder to behold, and I'm just enjoying it. And I'm glad I TiVo everything, because I'm going to be looking back on this season for a long time to enjoy it.
I think that's a smart idea. I think that if you have a DVR or a TiVo, I think you would be well served by getting some of this on record and trying to, you know, burn it to a disc or whatever, you know, you can end up doing, or keep it in your memory, because quite frankly, I think this will be an historical year. And I don't know that this year will ever, ever be matched again in the annals of NFL history. Now, I'm sure that there have been other teams and other years that have said the same thing. But, you know, unless this game takes a turn, you know, systematically, again, you know, like it did when we brought the salary cap and free agency into play almost 20 years ago now, I don't know if there's another turn out there to take. I just don't know that there is. And therefore, I think it's going to be with everybody now. Of course, you know, the NFL is a copycat league, as most successful, you know, leagues are and most successful teams are. Everybody tries to copy them. Well, when everybody tries to copy the Patriots and a few teams actually catch on and are able to do that, somebody else is going to break away from the pack. It may not be the Patriots. It could be anybody. Someone else will break away from the pack. It is as sure an occurrence as death and taxes. Okay? Somebody always creates something new. But I don't know that they'll create something new that will meet with such devastating results as what the Patriots have done. I don't know. I'd say, realistically speaking, I'd say that's a long shot.
Yeah, I'm just, like you said, I'm happy as a pig in slop with you. And great show, and thanks for taking my question.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate the time, as always. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. You, too, can make the phone call and participate in the program with your thoughts. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Of course, our email address, you know that, webradio@patriots.com. I will get to a lot of the emails. Brian Lowe from Patriots Today is going to join us, I believe, in the second hour of the program, as he normally does on Tuesdays. I do have an email question for you today. We do try to come up with some sort of a topical arrangement for you to consider and get your emails into. And I know we got a bunch of emails left over that I want to get to. So I wasn't sure I was going to go with this. But quite frankly, I do want to do it, because today's the first day that you can kind of get online on NFL.com and vote for the Pro Bowl. And we've done this in shows past in past years. But this year's a little different for the Patriots, because usually it's New England. And it's usually Patriots fans in particular. You. Yeah, I'm talking to you. It's Patriots fans that feel snubbed when it comes to the Pro Bowl. They feel like, oh, so-and-so should have gotten it. How come we're not getting any respect? And that seems to be a prevalent theme when it comes to picking the Pro Bowl. And quite frankly, a lot of it may be your own fault, because you don't go online and you don't vote. And the fans do have a vote in this. You get a percentage of the overall vote. And so you should take advantage of the situation now when you know your team is hot, and go to NFL.com and vote for the players. But what I wanted you to do today in particular for this program, and email me back at webradio@patriots.com, okay? It's too easy to say the whole offense deserves to go to the Pro Bowl or the whole defense deserves to go to the Pro Bowl. It's too easy. We're not going to do that. I want you to pick the three most deserving players on both sides of the football. Three.
Dan Tyco, Temple University.
Well, maybe not him. But I want you to pick three. I want you to narrow it down to the top three. Because if your top three get in, that's six representatives. And six, you'd have to admit, even in this day and age, would be a good representation for the Patriots. Now, I know we've had as many as, what, nine Colts or nine Steelers or something like that picked in recent past. And maybe that will happen with the Patriots. I frankly don't think so. Because this Patriots team, as we all know, was built and predicated on the fact that there is not one single superstar carrying this team, although you might say Tom Brady and or Randy Moss might be in that category right now. And maybe Adalis Thomas on the defensive side of the ball. But short of that, there's really not anybody that stands out like some other teams have had in the past because of the depth overall and because of the guys who just answer the bell on this team. That's the way this team was built, and I think you know that. So I'm going to ask you to make your cuts. And because the Pro Bowl voting has begun on NFL.com this week, I want you right here, right now on Patriots Playbook, webradio@patriots.com. I want you to send me your six players, three offense, three defense, that are most deserving for the Patriots. The three guys that you feel like will A, get the most votes, or B, you think should go, deserve to go right now. Now, we're not talking about based on the end of the season, how you think someone will project out over 16 weeks. I want you to tell me who is Pro Bowl caliber on this team after 6 weeks. Okay? Pro Bowl caliber after 6 weeks. Who deserves to go? Three offense, three defense. I didn't say four offense and two defense. I said three and three. And I think you can probably, I think you'll still probably have some trouble making your cuts. And even though we're not even halfway to the season, we usually do a half-season Pro Bowl team, and we'll probably do that in a couple weeks. That'll be a good bye week topic, I think, since the Patriots will have a bye week after week nine, after the Colts game. We'll save our, you know, mid-season Pro Bowl voting probably for that particular week. But right now, just because it's the start of Pro Bowl balloting, I want you to give me your top three on both sides of the football. Who is most deserving based on what you've seen or what you've read or what you've heard? webradio@patriots.com. So fire off your email and let me know. That's today's topic. You can also phone in your result, 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. Today was also the trading deadline in the NFL, in case you weren't aware. The Tampa Bay Bucks and the Kansas City Chiefs made a deal. The Bucks got Michael Bennett from the Chiefs for an undisclosed draft pick. But that's really where that boils down. So that's really the only deal that I've seen thus far. The trading deadline, though, is not for another approximately 90 minutes, 4 o'clock Eastern time today. But I did want to make you aware of that. So that's one deal that has gone down in the NFL today. I don't know that we'll get anything to affect the Patriots. I would kind of tend to doubt it, since I think they're probably pretty happy with the way that they are currently formed. Of course, you know, I think a major topic of conversation this week is whether or not the Patriots on the PUP, physically unable to perform list, will actually return. Richard Seymour, Troy Brown, obviously the two most notable on the Patriots list. Quite frankly, we're just not sure. And we probably won't know more specifically until we see the team get out on the field for practice tomorrow as they get ready for the Dolphins on Sunday. And if he's out on the practice field, you'd have to say, well, at least there's a shot. And the first injury report comes out, well, then there would be at least a shot. But again, technically you can stay on the PUP for up until three more weeks. So I guess by rule, the way that it goes is teams have until November the 6th to allow their PUP players to return to practice. And once a PUP player then begins practicing in his team, then has a three-week window in which to evaluate him. So Richard Seymour could stay on the PUP list until November the 6th. He doesn't have to come back. He's just eligible to come back. So if you don't see him on the field this week, it doesn't mean that he's going to be IR'd and he's done for the rest of the year. That does not mean that. It just means that, you know, he's still not ready. And the Patriots have three more weeks to decide what to do with him. And then if they decide they are going to activate him, then they have 3 weeks to evaluate him. So they wouldn't have to make a real roster move until Thanksgiving. If you stretched it out and used every available day, every amount, every minute of time that you have available to you under the rules, you're pushing it to Thanksgiving weekend before you'd have to make a roster call on a guy who's on the PUP. So that's really where we are. By the way, the stat from the NFL is of the 32 teams in the league, only 15 of these teams have players currently on the PUP or non-football injury lists. And just three teams have more than one player, the Patriots being one of those three teams. And they're still kicking the dog out of everybody. Isn't that the great thing? The other thing that I'd like to bring up, and Gary points it out to me, and I actually did have printed out, thanks to his prescient mind. I bet it's the first time you've ever been called prescient, right?
First time for everything.
That's exactly right. Fact is that the New England-Dallas game, in case you had not seen this, it was the highest-rated regular season game for the NFL on CBS television since 1998. How about that? Of course, we did spend most of last week talking about the fact that it was just the fifth matchup ever between two teams that were as much as 5-0 during the regular season. Just the fifth time that it ever happened. But the Patriots-Cowboys are the highest-rated regular season game on any network in 2007 and the highest-rated game on CBS since 1998. The game rating share peaked at 21 for a rating and 36 for a share. Now, in case you don't know what that means, the 21 means that's 21%. That means basically one out of every five televisions in existence. One out of every five televisions in existence was watching New England and Dallas. The 36 share means that basically 3.6 out of every 10 TVs on were tuned into the game. So that's almost four. That's almost two out of every five. Almost. Two out of every five televisions that were tuned on watching something were watching Patriots at Cowboys. So that's what the rating and the share means of the overall audience. That's what it peaked at. The average overnight household rating share was 18.5, and this is what the entire football game averaged out to, all right, over the course of the, what was it, almost 4 hours that they were on the air. It averaged out to an 18.5 rating and a 35 share, which, again, means roughly one out of every five televisions in existence, and just a fraction under 20%, was tuned in, and at 35 share means that's 3.5 out of every 10 televisions that were on, plugged in and turned on, were watching Patriots and Cowboys. That's up 37% from last year's comparable game, which was Kansas City-Pittsburgh in the same window in the television markets in this country that are considered metered, you know, the top markets in the country. So it's the highest rating in metered markets for a regular season NFL on CBS game since CBS reacquired the NFL in 1998. So CBS is real happy with the Patriots and the Cowboys and real happy with the fact that the Patriots are dominant. And I think history will show, and I think history will prove. And I would actually love to try to talk to someone who is in network television. Maybe we'll ask Russell this on Thursday, Russell Baxter from ESPN, but because he might have I think that he might have some knowledge of this. Television ratings are always better in this league when there's a dominant team. They just are. For two reasons. One, people love a winner. People like to see good play, and they know when they're going to get good play, they're going to watch the team because it's entertaining. That's number one. Number two, people hate a winner. People want to see Goliath go down, and they want to see the latest David who's going to take a shot with a slingshot and slay Goliath. It's a win-win for the television people because, A, you're either a bandwagon fan and you want the Patriots to win, or, B, you hate the Patriots' guts, you think they win too much, and you want to see them go down and go down hard. Either way, television wins. and I think history will bear that out. And so TV loves the Pats right now. And you had, you know, the new millennium's America's team facing the 20th century's America's team on the football field this last Sunday in Dallas. That's what you basically had. And while I think that the Cowboys and a certain faction of the Cowboys and their particular organization and fandom around the NFL will always be Cowboy fans just because they've established the fact that they're America's team back from when Tex Schramm, you know, gave them the moniker back in the 1980s. And, you know, obviously there are a lot of people where old habits are hard to die, and it's just it's a marketing ploy that everybody else wishes they had thought of, and the Cowboys just came up with it first. But the Cowboys were a popular team back then when you had Captain America and Roger Staubach at the quarterback, and so they've just had that moniker for a while. But, you know, obviously the Patriots sort of stole that away from them based on the whole, you know, 2001 season and the 9-1-1 tragedy and everything else. Patriots have kind of stolen that away from the Cowboys over the course of the last 6 or 7 years. And maybe Spygate's tainted it a little bit, but there's no arguing the fact that this is a talented team like few others have probably ever been in the history of the NFL, and I really don't think that's overstating it. I don't think that's just hyperbole. I think you've got to be able to look at it with your own eyes and be able to tell that that's the case. So that's where we are. That's where we stand. Trying to bring you up today a little bit on the PUP. The television ratings are boffo for the Patriots. They're up for the NFL overall, thanks in large part to the Patriots and the Cowboys this last week. And you've got the poor, woe-is-me Miami Dolphins waiting in the wings on Sunday. An 0-6 Miami team that can't get out of its own way, don't have a quarterback. You know, Ronnie Brown seems to be running the football pretty well, but that may be the only thing going. What I don't understand is it's why the Miami defense is falling on hard time, and that's one of the things that we'll definitely spend some time jumping into this week. Just why are Jason Taylor and Zach Thomas and company, why are they having a hard time stopping people on that side of the ball when they've always had one of the tougher defenses, especially for the Patriots to go up against? Got to spend some time talking about that because, quite frankly, I'm as perplexed as you are where that's concerned. That's a little disconcerting. Let's get to some emails, and we'll take a break. We'll get to some more emails, and I said Brian Lowe from Patriots Today is going to join us, as he usually does in hour number two. How far down do we want to go here, Garrett? We go down to the bottom of the list, pick it up for some from yesterday? We want to go that far? Okay. We'll start up at the top then with the email question of the day, because that way we'll never get to some of these emails. Like I said, never fear, though, all right? Because part of the thing here is that we do read them all, as I always say, okay? So we'll get to that. Let's get to, okay, here we go. This one comes from David in Portsmouth, who says his Pro Bowl selections are Brady, Moss, Wilfork. He didn't add much more, but at least he added that. certainly Brady and Moss, I think, would be Gibbons. Wilfork on the other side of the football. But you got two other defensive picks and one other offensive pick, David. So don't stop there. Don't let that stop you. This one comes from Luis in Tampa, who says, John, since we are in the spoiled fan complaint Tuesday, I want to ask, what's your take on the play where Barber should have been tackled in the end zone for a safety? Was it just his merit, or did bad tackling affect the Patriots' defense? Good question, Luis. I think it's a combination of both. Yeah, I think the Patriots had 2-3 shots at him in the end zone and probably should have brought him down. But I also think that's the kind of back that Marion Barber is. He's just not easy to put down. I'll tell you what I really respected, even though, you know, as a Patriots fan, you probably don't like it, and I'm sure that this player didn't like it, but that stiff arm he gave Rodney Harrison certainly brought a jolt, sent a jolt through me. And, you know, I think that just kind of shows you what kind of a guy Marion Barber is. He's a tough, hard-nosed, talented football player. And it's hard for me to believe that for at least a year, he and Lawrence Maroney were in the same backfield for the Minnesota Golden Gophers. Why wasn't that team better than it was? I'm surprised anybody in the Big Ten could tackle those guys.
Maroney kept getting hurt.
I guess that must have been it. No kidding. Is Lawrence Maroney still on this team? What number does he wear, by the way? I forgot. Seems to be a prevalent opinion. David sends another one here from Portsmouth. Mankins, Thomas, Samuel. What, are we going to do this an email at a time, David? Thanks. Mankins, Thomas, and Samuel in terms of his other Pro Bowl picks. I appreciate that. This one comes from Jimmy, who says, all right, on defense, I've got Green, Thomas, and Seau. On offense, Brady, Moss, Welker. Well, as far as offense is concerned, I think I would agree with you right now, although I just don't know if Welker, if I had to make a cut, I don't know that Welker, you know, God, I love him. I think he's an unbelievable player. I don't know that Welker, if I'm forced to make a cut and only choose three, I think I'm putting Welker aside for a moment and keeping Moss. And I think I'm including, and maybe you'll find this somewhat controversial, I think I'm including Matt Light. I realize that he's been somewhat maligned in his career, but I think he's having an outstanding year at tackle. And right now I think that there needs to be some symbol of improved play representing from that Patriots offensive line, and I think Light is as good as any. Jason in Panama City, Florida. Defense, Seau, Thomas, Wilfork. Offense, Light, Brady, Moss. Okay, there you go. Jason agrees. As far as the defensive picks, I'd have to say, yeah, I would agree with you. I'd go with Seau, Thomas, and Wilfork, although I think I might consider Asante Samuel over Seau, because I think Asante now is rounding back into shape, and I think, you know, Asante got screwed last year, personally, you know, with his 10 picks. Hard to argue against Junior right now with what he's done the last couple of weeks, especially at, you know, age 37, 38, 68, whatever, however old he is. Thomas and Wilfork, I would definitely say they're candidates. And I would also have to throw in there as a possibility Ty Warren again, because I think Ty Warren's learning how to become a one-man wrecking crew. See, all good candidates. But I'm asking you to pick three. Make a cut and pick three on both sides of the football. You know, who you think are most deserving, most worthy as Pro Bowl nominations, you know, from this Patriots team right now. Charlie from Chicopee says, the offense has numerous candidates. Tom Brady and Randy Moss are no-brainers. Wes Welker is a good candidate, but I am going to go with a road grader, Logan Mankins. It could also have been Dan Copen, but since he has missed a game, I'm going to go with one of the fat boys, as Tom calls them, who's been keeping Tom upright and hitting all of the toys Scott and Bill gave him this year. All right, Charlie, that's a good choice. Mankins, I think, could also be I think he could certainly be a choice, and I know he's a Pro Bowl caliber player. So, you know, Mankins is fine as a selection. My personal preference would be Light, but Mankins would be fine. And I agree with your sentiment overall that somebody from the line deserves to go. Charlie says, defensively, I'm going to go with Big Vince. We've played several games with the strategy of stopping the run with seven in the box, and you cannot do that without Big Vince. Then I'll go with Mike Vrabel, totally mislabeled as a dirty player. And for the last slot, a tough call, but I'm going with Ty Warren on the rationale that he should have made the team last year, and that's how most of the world selects Pro Bowl players a year after they deserve it. Charlie, that's an excellent email. Cannot disagree with your choices. I don't think there are any wrong answers here. This is just, you know, it's based on your opinion and what you see thus far of this football team. So there's no wrong answers. But, Charlie, that's a particularly good email. So thank you. I want you to chime in as well. Webradio@patriots.com. Give me, right now, three on offense, three on defense from the New England Patriots, who is most deserving to go to the Pro Bowl. Pro Bowl voting is open on NFL.com. And well, one of these years we'll write him in and we'll get him some votes, if you so choose. Is he, by the way, is he active with the Colts still? Does anybody know? I wonder.
I have no idea.
I'm sure somebody...
I don't have the slightest idea.
Well, I don't expect that you would, Bill. But maybe somebody will email us and let us know that. At any rate, three on offense, three on defense. Make tough choices here, folks. You can certainly go vote on NFL.com as the Pro Bowl voting is open and available. But, you know, this has been one of the chief complaints from many of you fans when the Pro Bowl results are announced. How come the Patriots get snubbed? Why are we not getting any national respect? Well, now is your chance to get that national respect. You have a role. You have a say. And we're going to discuss it here, right here inside the playbook.
Hi, this is Richard Seymour. If you're a big Patriots fan, show your team pride and win great prizes by ordering your Patriot specialty license plate. Team Rules says your car has to be registered in Massachusetts to be eligible. When you place your order, you have the chance to win Patriots tickets and memorabilia. Proceeds from the sales of the license plates go to the New England Patriots Charitable Foundation. Now that's worth driving for. To score your new set, apply online or in person at your local RMV or log on to Patriots.com for more details. Show your team spirit, give to a great cause, and get your Patriots license plate today.
When you got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mile and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats! Woo! Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo! And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
Playoff action is back in Foxborough. Once again, your New England Revolution have advanced to the MLS playoffs and are looking for a return trip to MLS Cup.
Drives it for him, and the goal! 1-0 Revs! What a huge tally for New England!
Saturday, November 3rd at 7:30 p.m., Taylor Twellman, Pat Noonan, Matt Reese, and the rest of the Revs take to the field in Foxborough, and they want you there to cheer them on to victory.
Takes a touch, and buries it! 1-0 Revs! The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet!
Individual tickets start at just $18, and significant discounts are available for groups of 20 or more. Bring your family or group, and don't miss a minute of this exciting playoff match at Gillette Stadium. Call the Revolution Ticket Office today at 1-877-GET-REVS. That's 1-877-GET-REVS to get your playoff ticks.
Get your ticks.
And get the Revolution.
Jim, talk about the long touchdown pass to Dante Stallworth. It looked like you two were doing the jitterbug while the Dallas secondary was doing the Charleston.
Is that right? I don't know what the hell that means, but it was a great route.
That was post-game, obviously, after the win over the Cowboys on Sunday with Tom Brady. And the questioner, by the way, I believe is a producer from the midday program on KTCK, The Ticket, 1310 in Dallas, which is their top-rated sports station. And they do a bit, a comedy bit, at least I guess they think it's funny there, where their producer asks some goofball question just to see what kind of a rise they can get out of the people they ask the questions of.
Jim, talk about the long touchdown pass to Dante Stallworth. It looked like you two were doing the jitterbug while the Dallas secondary was doing the Charleston.
Is that right? I don't know what the hell that means, but...
I know what it means. What an idiot you are. That's funny.
Oh, my God, that is funny.
Is that what we're doing for humor now in Dallas? I'm a little disappointed in my home state, if that's the case.
Same guy asked Bill a question. Bill just said, next.
Yeah, I know, which is the way it should have been handled. I mean, you know, but Tom's the kind of guy where, you know, you could probably get at least a half a rise out of him on that one. You know, that's more Brady's, you know, personality. But, you know, he didn't fall for it, you know. And then obviously you knew that Bill Belichick wasn't going to fall for it. So, but that's what that was.
What's going on out there?
Yeah. So that's anyway what that whole deal was all about. I thought that with it was somewhat amusing anyway in the aftermath of the game on Sunday. So we continue here inside Patriots Playbook on a Tuesday. Web radio at patriots.com is how you reach us. I'm looking for your, through week six, I'm looking for your top three on offense and defense Pro Bowl selections for the Patriots, because Pro Bowl voting is open on NFL.com as of this week. And because this has long been a sore spot with many Patriots fans, and a lot of Patriots fans feel that this is where the football team has just been undervalued and underrepresented in recent time. This is your chance now to make your voice heard. So, but I want you to make a tough cut now. I want you to choose three on both sides of the football. Who is most deserving of being a Pro Bowl caliber player in your mind, in your esteemed estimation, after this juggernaut 6 weeks?
Any chance other players around the league don't vote for Patriots because of Camergate?
Sure, I think that's I think it's very possible. I think that's a great question. You know, I think it's something that undoubtedly will happen. I think that there will definitely be some sort of a payback. Now, I don't know to what extent. There might be a couple of guys that, you know, would leave a borderline guy off. But I think there's a lot of mutual respect on the field for players. You know, and I think that the players that really stand out are respected regardless of what, you know, coaching staffs or front office staffs do. Like, for instance, I think, you know, obviously there's imminent respect around the league for a guy like Randy Moss. I think Wes Welker is still earning his respect, but I think that the respect is universal for a guy like Tom Brady. I think there's universal respect for a guy like Junior Seau. It is probably quickly becoming that way for a guy like Adalys Thomas. Teddy Bruschi, because it could fall in that category because of what he's overcome to get back onto the football field. You know, but could a guy that hasn't made the Pro Bowl yet and still relatively young in his career get caught in this PR snafu? Sure. Guy like Ty Warren, perfect example. He probably should have made the team last year, didn't. Santi Samuel probably should have made the team last year, did not. I could see those two guys being left off on some ballots simply because of, you know, Patriots have enough good guys, and I'm not giving them any more because they cheat, because of that kind of attitude. It's not a right attitude. I'm just saying that that's the attitude that a lot of people are going to give you. I think that's a legitimate thing, and that's too bad. That's why I'm glad that they spread it out, and that's why you as a fan, you know, can help try to counterbalance that at least to an extent. Obviously, you can also stuff the ballot box, too. So, you know, I think you're allowed to, what, vote 10 times, I think, something like that? I don't know. Maybe Major League Baseball does it like that. I don't know. I don't think I've ever voted, to be honest with you, at least not for Pro Bowl. But maybe I'll have to change that and do that this year. I wanted to read you something as well from one of my favorite football sites. I'm sure many of you are familiar with Cold Hard Football Facts. But they have a story on there talking about the Patriots' dominance overall. And this appeared on their website originally on Sunday after the game was over. But in case you haven't had a chance to surf over, I just wanted to hit a couple of highlights here, because honestly, it's rather impressive. You know, the research that they've done and some of the comments that they've put forward. And I think it's appropriate as we kind of talk about the pace that the Patriots are on and the fact that, you know, if they lose this year, it quite frankly may be because they lose the game rather than the other team wins the game. And I mentioned that off the top of the program today. here we go. I don't know. Gary, do you have this line from Anchorman? As Luke Wilson said after getting his good arm ripped off by a lion in Anchorman, "Oh, God, this is getting to be re-God-bleep-diculous."
Actually, I'm not even mad. That's amazing.
You have that one, at least. He says here on this article, says, "The Patriots are re-God-bleep-diculous now. They're off the charts, and the Cold Hard Football Facts always enjoy watching the pursuit of history. As it stands now, the Patriots are on pace to break the all-time records for wins, 16, currently 15 by three teams. Points, 613. Currently the record 556 by the 1998 Vikings. Point differential, 23 points per game. It's currently, the record is 19.8 by the 1962 Packers. How about that one? They're outscoring people by 23 points per game right now, and the record, 19.8 by the 62 Packers. Bet you didn't think that a team from that era had that kind of dominance. Well, I'm telling you, the Packers of the 60s, they did. Touchdown passes, 56. Currently, the record 51 by the 2004 Colts. Obviously, we know Peyton Manning had, what, 49 of those. And, yes, Tom Brady would be on pace to smash or to at least break Manning's personal record. And I can't imagine there's a Patriot fan out there that wouldn't be rooting for him to do that. For all of the hype that Peyton Manning has had, and a lot of it deserved, he's very good. He's easily one of the best quarterbacks in the game. He always has been. I think from the time he stepped on the field, he's had different weapons to throw to than Brady has had before this year. And now that you see, when these two quarterbacks have comparable weapons around them, well, I think this just goes to show you that Tom's every bit the quarterback that Peyton Manning is, and that's no disrespect to Peyton Manning. It's just that Tom Brady hasn't gotten the respect because he hasn't had the talent. He hasn't had the same type of targets to throw to. Now he does, and now you're seeing what he can do with it. And the other record the Patriots could break, touchdowns in a season. 77 of them is what they're on pace to score this year. The record is 70 by the 1984 Miami Dolphins. So pretty good list. Bunch of other lesser ones, according to Cold Hard Football Facts, that they are on a pace to break. But that's a pretty good list. They go on to say here that New England's win over Dallas erased all shreds of doubt. Doubt we had last week because of New England's easy schedule. And again, this is Cold Hard Football Facts, not me. Of New England's easy schedule, that we are witnessing one of the special teams of all time. One of our favorite NFL books is Eddie Epstein's Dominance, which tried to establish by statistical method the 12 most dominant teams in modern history, which would be from 1950 to the present. Now, Epstein's teams, in fact, I've had a chance to interview Epstein on ESPN Radio, and he's a brilliant guy. I love his books. I had not read all of Dominance, but I've seen part of it. And this comes from his book as well. It says, Epstein's teams had to be champions in their given season, something the Patriots are far from achieving, as we all know, but it obviously could happen. And otherwise, they had to show dominance all across the board. So, again, to even be on Epstein's list, you had to win a championship. You could be a really good team, but should you be considered a dominant team if you don't win a title? I don't think you should. You can be a good team without winning a title, but I think to be a dominant team, you got to win. And winning a Super Bowl is what it's all about in the NFL. So here's Eddie Epstein's list in chronological order, okay, from 1950 to now, of the most dominant teams in NFL history. You ready for this? Okay, forgive me if you've already read this, all right, but I think this is good stuff. This is I love this stuff. All right, the first team was the 1955 Cleveland Browns. They went 9-2-1. They had a point differential of about 11 points per game, beating their opponent, and they outgained their opponent by 94 yards per game. Doesn't sound like much by today's standards, does it? But by 1955 standards, that was pretty significant. The 1958 Baltimore Colts followed. They finished the year 9-3. They won each game by about 15 points per game. They outgained each team by about 105 yards total offense. The 1962 Green Bay Packers, in my estimation, one of the most dominant teams of all time. And this is John Rook speaking, not necessarily pro Cold Football Facts or Eddie Epstein, but you know, I think the 62 Packers rank right up there with also the 66 Packers that who did not make this list, by the way. But the 62 Packers finished 13-1. They outscored their opponents by 20 points per game, outgained their opponents by 108 yards per game. Follow that with the 1971 Dallas Cowboys, who finished 11-3. 13.1 points per game they outscored, and 112 yards per game they outgained. The 1972 Dolphins, you know, had to be on this team, had to be on this list as the only team to go undefeated, 14-0 in the regular season. They outscored their opponents by 15.3 points per game that year, and they outgained their opponents by 124.2 yards per game. Now, compare the 72 Dolphins with another of the all-time dominant teams, in my estimation, Maybe yours too, because maybe this is when you start really paying attention and maybe this team will be familiar to you. The 1979 Pittsburgh Steelers, sort of the epitome of all those great Steeler teams of the 1970s, but I think the 79 team belongs up there with some of the most dominant of all time. And yet, they were only 12-4 in the regular season. They only outscored their opponents by a fraction under 10 points per game, although they did outgain their opponents by a record high of 124.3 yards per game. Nobody else has gained their opponents by more than the 79 Steelers. Okay? So just, again, this is for your own edification, just to give you a sense of what we're talking about here. The 1985 Bears are on the list, who finished 15-1, outscored their opponents by 16 points per game, outgained their opponents by 106 yards. The 1989 San Francisco 49ers on the list. And again, representative of some great 49ers teams of the 1980s. But the 89 team, probably at the top of the list, they were 14-2, outscored their opponents 12 points per game, outgained their opponents 103 yards per game. Again, doesn't sound overwhelming, does it? The 1991 Redskins are on the list, 14-2, 16 points per game, 90 yards per game. The 94 49ers on this team. No Dallas Cowboy team in the 1990s made this list, by the way, even though they're considered sometimes the decade's team because of their Super Bowl titles. But they're not necessarily considered one of the most dominant, according to Eddie Epstein. 94 49ers, 13-3, 13 points, 76 yards. 96 Green Bay Packers, team that, of course, the Patriots lost to in the Super Bowl. 13-3 record, 15 points per game, 86 yards per game. And then the 99 St. Louis Rams, 13-3, 17.8 points per game, 107 yards per game. So where does this New England team then stack up with the NFL's most dominant teams of all time, according to Eddie Epstein? All right, here's where we go. Right now, they project to 16-0. Nobody's ever done that, with the exception of the 72 Dolphins at 14-0. Outscoring their opponents by 23 points per game, which would by far and away best the top mark of 19.8 by the 62 Packers. And they're outgaining their opponents, and again, this is projected out based on the path that they're on right now. This is projected out over 16 games. Patriots outgaining their opponents by 174.5 yards per game. That is 50 yards more per game than the 79 Steelers, who currently hold the record. Those are all-time great numbers, kids. All-time great numbers. That's greater than all-time great in every category. So I didn't come on the program today just, you know, shouting hyperbole at you and telling you something you probably didn't already know, but I'm giving you some numbers to kind of back it up with a little bit here, especially when you could take this to the water cooler to impress your friends and, you know, bore your wife or whatever, or your husband or whoever's the non-football fan in your family with. You can just, you know, and of course you're going to spout these numbers and they're going to go, God, I hate the Patriots. I can't wait for them to lose, so you'll shut up. Well, just be careful how you use this, right? Just be careful how you use this. But I'm giving you some good ammo here, all right? And now, let's just say, for instance, and this is what I love about Cold Hard Football Facts, let's just say that the Patriots fall off a little bit the rest of the way, okay? Let's say they lose two games, all right? Let's just say, inexplicably, they lose two games. Their numbers, even if they lose two games, could still hang with the all-time greats. This is what is projected now. Let's say they lose two games. They have their current level of dominance in points and yardage. Then the final numbers in that scenario would be 14-2, okay, which would certainly be behind the 15 wins by the Bears all-time. But they would still outscore opponents by 15.8 points per game, which would be 1, 2, 3, 4, that would be fifth best in point differential. That would be the fifth best. And they would outgain their opponents by 119.8 yards per game. Again, this is having things, all right? Having things from here on out. They would still outgain their opponents by 119.8 per game, which would be the third best all-time yard differential total in NFL history amongst championship teams. So it's still an all-time great team. Probably, even if they go 14-2, probably still overall a top five team all time. And that's even figuring the Patriots into, as they call it, a 10-game slump over the next 10 games, the final 10 games of this regular season. In other words, we're taking the numbers they have right now. We're projecting it forward over 16 games. We're cutting it in half and then averaging, adding everything together and then totaling it and then averaging it out. And so it's a 10-game slump that we're putting the Patriots in. Their numbers still probably project them out to a top-five team all time. How, you know, again, how great is this football season? If you're a Pats fan, you ought to be just giddy beyond belief, beyond delight right now. That's remarkable. It's an all-time great football team is what you're looking at here in New England. Thanks to Cold Hard Football Facts and thanks to Eddie Epstein for providing the research and the numbers on that particular scenario. Because when I saw that, I'm like, God, oh my goodness, that really hits home. That really shows it to you in black and white what it's all about. I think that's significant. It's remarkably significant. Webradio at Patriots.com. If you'd like to comment on that, you certainly can do so on what you think about those numbers and those projections. You know, and honestly, we'll add this to our email topic of the day on Pro Bowl players, but I kind of like to take that a step further here in hour number two of the program today. What is your most familiar dominant team? I know that many football fans, you go way back. You maybe go 10 years, you maybe go 20. Maybe you go as far back as I do, 40 years, in trying to really follow NFL football. What's the most dominant team you remember in any single year? Now, for me, the one that I really remember the most in terms of dominance is the 79 Steelers. And it's because, as many of you know from listening to this program, I grew up a Dallas Cowboys fan. I born and raised in Fort Worth, Texas. So, honestly, and I still am a Cowboy fan, except when they – so my nephew texted me, by the way. He's a freshman in high school in Fort Worth, and he's a huge football fan. He plays high school football and baseball, and he texted me, and he knows that, you know, I was a big Cowboy fan, as my whole family still is. But, you know, my family is also Patriots fans, too, simply because of the Patriots resurgence, because they know that I've worked for the Patriots for the last 15 years. So you'd have to say the Cowboys and the Patriots are their top two favorite teams. He sends me a text before the game on Sunday, and he goes, "Who are you rooting for?" And I sent him back two words in my text. Any idea, Gary, what those two words might have been?
F.U. touchdown. Oh,
no, not to my nephew. My two-word response was, "My paycheck." And then he texted me back with another two-word response, "Good answer." So, you know, I think my family was certainly rooting for the Cowboys. I can't blame them for doing that. But I don't think anybody was crushed to see the Patriots win, because the Patriots are definitely their second favorite team. And and when the Patriots, you know, win championships, they know that I'm going to send them Super Bowl gear. So they're really thrilled about that. And the pro shop down the hallway is also very thrilled about that. So because I send my whole family Patriots things, and they're the only people to have it down there in Fort Worth, Texas. So they're thrilled about that. But
what if they play the Cowboys?
What if they play the Cowboys in the Super Bowl? Then I think
they're still going to want that gear.
Probably not. Probably wear the Cowboys NFC title stuff before they'd wear the Patriots Super Bowl stuff. Although I think, you know, they'll probably warm up to it. They'll probably warm up to it, just because, you know, they're already the stray Texans anyway. That what are you wearing a Patriots stuff for? You root for the Patriots? You a Patriots fan? And my nephews have to explain, "Well, my uncle works for the Patriots." "Oh, okay. Well, you don't like the Patriots, though, do you?" "Well, yeah, kind of. They win." What little kid you know that doesn't like to follow a winner? You know, every 10, 11, 12-year-old kid I know is a bandwagon fan. They like to follow winners. Like my son, all my nephews, my nieces, the Patriots, yeah, they win. They win Super Bowls. Yeah, let's root for them. I like them. So that's what they do. That's what kids do. All right, so in addition to emails, and we'll get to a few more of them here, again, on your Pro Bowl picks for the Patriots, 3 offense, 3 defense, that's what I'm looking for here. What's the most dominant football team you can remember, that you can remember following? in the NFL during your time as an NFL fan? And as I said, mine is the 79 Steelers. And why? Because they were the nemesis for the Cowboys. I really thought the Dallas Cowboys had very good football teams in the 1970s. They won the Super Bowl in 72. They won the Super Bowl in 77. And yet they don't get credit for being a quote-unquote 70s team because of the fact that the Steelers won four in that decade and capped off by that team in 1979 that beat the Rams in that Super Bowl. And I remember that one very well. But it just seems that they were representative of that entire decade for the Steelers. And so I'd have to say that those 79 Steelers probably epitomized to me what, you know, dominance was in the NFL during my younger days. I personally believe that the 62 Packers are one of the most dominant teams of all time. The numbers that I just gave you will certainly bear that out. They're certainly, you know, even in today's day and age, they still rank, you know, in the top 5 to 10 of all-time great teams. So if you, this is really, you know, the only way that you can compare teams from different decades and different eras is by doing the statistical comparison. Obviously, you can't compare a 240-pound lineman against a 300-pound lineman on the offensive side of the ball like you have today. You can't do that. That would just be a physical mismatch, game over. But you can compare these teams, statistically speaking, based on the relative universe in which they competed during their time. And this is how you do it, with stats. And that's why I like that book by Eddie Epstein called Dominance, because it spells it out not only in the NFL but for a lot of other sports too. So if you haven't had the book, you haven't had a chance to see it, and it's great. I'm sure you can pick it up on Amazon or whatever you want to do. But So the Steelers come to mind to me as being a dominant team, one of the most dominant teams that I can recall. What about you? Webradio@patriots.com. That's how you reach us here in the program. So let's fire it off. Let's see what you got here. We got about 45 minutes left in the program here for Tuesday. I'd really be interested to know who you recollect as a dominant football team. And again, the criteria has to do with they had to have won a championship. Okay, this has to be a championship team in order to truly be considered dominant. You can be a good team without winning a championship. You can't be a dominant team without winning a title. That's mandatory. I just don't think that there's any gray area where that's concerned. So give me one. I know you got one. If it's the Pats, great. Tell me. Let's talk about it. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. And, of course, your Pro Bowl picks on both sides of the football. Okay? That's what I'm looking for. Let's get to a couple of more of those. Let's see. This one comes from. That's an email. That's an email that talks about cold hard football facts. Good stuff. This one comes from Mike in Erie, Pennsylvania, who says you got to play back the segment from Bill's interview, 156 into it, where the guy from Down Under, I think, asked Bill about the boys from Beantown treating the boys from Big D like a couple of flapper girls on gin and juice. Oh, is that the Do we have Bill's response to that? We don't have the question? Okay. Never mind then. And then he says he's got some interesting stats that he passed along here. Well, this comes from Greg Rosenthal, who I guess is a blogger, columnist. And he says here, I mentioned this in goal line stand, but I'm now armed with numbers. Patriots just aren't predictable with personnel use enough to call someone a designated goal line back. Below are the goal line carries from the first 3 weeks in New England when Maroney was healthy. When he was healthy, Morris got 4 carries, 2 touchdowns. Maroney, 2 carries, no touchdowns. Heath Evans, 3 carries, 1 touchdown. But if you look a little further and include carries inside the 10, we get this. Sammy Morris, 5 carries, 2 TDs. Maroney, 6 carries, no TDs. Evans, 4 carries, 1 TD. Morris's involvement appears to pick up near the goal line, but it's not like Maroney isn't getting his chances. Maroney's numbers would look a little better if he didn't come up 1 yard short on a 7-yard run from the 8-yard line in week 3. Yeah, I remember that run. Now, Maroney's inability to score is a concern. Last year, he went 3 for 8 inside the 5-yard line. Corey Dillon went 9 for 14. The point here, though, is that Maroney is likely to continue getting the same amount of chances as Morris. The Patriots don't like being predictable, and they won't have a designated goal line back. That's pretty good, actually. Like that, Mike. Thank you for passing that along. First of all, we got to get Lawrence Maroney healthy again and out on the football field. Right now, I guess there's some doubt as to whether or not that's actually going to happen anytime soon. Diane in Bridgeport, Connecticut. We're going to go back down toward the list here. Says, guys, given the physical health of the team's running backs, what is the likelihood that Corey Dillon will be asked to come back and play some? Nil. Nil. No, that's not going to happen. I think you've seen that even with Maroney being down and whether or not Sammy Morris is able to come back at all, I think you may realize that, quite honestly, the Patriots are in pretty good shape. Fact is that Kevin Faulk came out and rushed for 50 yards. You know, that's why they went and they signed Kyle Echol, because they knew they could. And it probably wasn't somebody of the kind of quality that they need. They need a tough, you know, between the tackles kind of running back, and that's the kind of thing that Echol can give them. And they also have Heath Evans that can do basically the same thing that Corey Dillon did, you know, from short yardage distance. He didn't have the ability to get around the end like Corey did, but Evans is fairly tough to bring down. So I think between, you know, if Maroney doesn't come back for another week, I think between having Morris, Faulk, Evans, and Echol, I it's slim and none and slim just left town. This one comes from, well, we didn't get a question from Jerry. Just sent an email without a question to it. Let's see if we can catch up here. Oh, Mike from Columbus, Ohio says, I was watching highlights of the game, and the play where Brady was strip-sacked sure looked like it could have been another instance of the tuck rule. He wanted to throw on a three-step drop, pumped to throw, but stopped the motion, then got hit from behind and lost the ball. At no time did he pull the ball into his body. Was that an officiating error that could have been challenged? Has the tuck rule been unofficially dumped, since the controversy? I can't remember any other tuck rule calls since then. Well, to me, watching the highlights and watching that play, Mike, he never pulled the ball in. And I think the argument in the tuck rule was is that he pulled the ball in. So the ball was coming down like it was coming back in, but the ball got tipped away from behind, as I recall the replay. So he never brought it all the way in. It might have been a matter of mere millimeters between what transpired on Sunday and what transpired in 2001. But suffice to say, I think the ball came loose this past Sunday well before it did on the play in 2001. Because I believe he brought the ball all the way down and, if not touched the ball, patted the ball, hit the ball, did something before the ball came loose, as I recall. Mike says, the Dallas Morning News blog during the game pointed to the Dallas offense attacking Rodney Harrison in coverage. The way they put it was, look for Rodney Harrison and throw it to whoever he's covering. Do you see Harrison in coverage as a liability going forward, or is he rusty from being out of action 4 weeks? He's rusty from being out of action, number one. Number two, his primary responsibility is to pick up, you know, receivers coming across the middle, and his responsibility in a lot of instances is to cover Jason Witten. And if you're asking me, I think the Patriots did a pretty good job on Witten. What did they limit him to, 3-4 grabs? Again, I don't have the stats in front of me. I think they did a pretty good job in limiting him. So I don't really have a problem with how Rodney performed. But my guess is that they probably thought that because of the mismatch, number one, physically, and number two, because of the fact that he was getting, you know, his first appreciable playing time of the year. So why not go for something that could be perceived to be a weakness? I don't disagree with that philosophy at all, to be quite honest with you. All right, let's see what else we have here. We have Philip in Nova Scotia. Besides for the obvious reasons, why are the Dolphins such a bad team? Is it bad ownership, bad luck, poor drafting, trading? When did their troubles begin, and when do you think it might end? I've heard people say that it began with Ricky Williams, and it's been all downhill from there. I'm not complaining that they suck, just curious why. Well, I think Philip will probably delve into this a little bit more over the course of the week. We don't normally do that on Tuesdays. But just off the top of my head, I think it's because, number one, they've had a change in coaches several times over the last few years. Obviously, they had I'm losing my train of thought here. Who was with them last year?
Nick Saban.
Thank you, Nick Saban. They had Nick Saban bail on him after only a couple of years to go to Alabama. So they brought in Cam Cameron, who hadn't been a head coach. They had Dave Wannstedt before that. So they've had quite a bit of turnover in the last several years. And anytime you have turnover, it means you turn over also your assistants. And the players that have actually been there for a while are learning a completely different system. So I think turnover has hurt the Dolphins. That's number one. Number two, they haven't had a good quarterback. They just flat out have not had a good quarterback. They tried to get one this year in Trent Green, and he may never step on the football field again. You've got to have a good quarterback to be a good team or to have some consistency there. You know, I think Joey Harrington's an okay quarterback. He's not a good quarterback. Dante Culpepper was hurt. And still, even so, even well, I think he's a good quarterback. I don't think he's a great quarterback. So, you know, they haven't had a great quarterback since Dan Marino. And I don't think anybody will really argue that point. And I think number three, defensively, I think some of their standout players are beginning to wear and tear a little bit. I think Jason Taylor is still one of the best defenders in the league. But I think Zach Thomas is beginning to wear down. Of course, he'll probably come up with a huge game this Sunday. But I just think it's a combination of those little things that have transpired into making this team, you know, one big cluster bleep right now. That's kind of how I look at the Dolphins' demise. And again, we will spend some time, you know, looking at that throughout the course of the week, and we look more specifically into
it. We're waiting.
Oh, Brian, how are you?
Oh, good. Heard you say cluster beep, this team and all that. I'm like, they're 6-0.
What are you stepping into?
They're 6-0.
No. That's not what we're referring to.
Then I realized.
We're referring to the Dolphins.
Yeah. Then I realized what you were talking about there. Yeah. Hey, I'm happy I could make it.
Brian Lowe from Patriots Today. Obviously, you're busy today. What are you working on? What's busy today?
Work. What?
No, what are you working on?
Flirting with Christina.
Well, that I could excuse you for. Because if you're telling me about today's edition, it's like, I don't care. But if you're telling me you were engaged with Christina in hot chit-chat, then I'm all for it. And I'm saying,
we chatted.
And then I'm telling you, get out of here, and why are you in here?
Right, why did I give you the time of day? Why did I even bother? Yeah, there's room for both. Let's just put it that way.
Okay.
You know, there's room for both. And, a few different balls in the air.
Okay.
You know?
A few different balls in the air.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, cheerleader chit-chat.
What are we bringing that back, by the way? Is that making a comeback?
That's the weekly podcast with Lori.
Nice.
If I was taking part in some cheerleader chit-chat, I definitely would not have found time for this.
Okay.
Time out. Why are you teaming up on me?
I don't know.
She's got to be careful when she's in here.
You're not kidding. We're going to take these things and blow them way out of proportion.
Right. You do join Dick for a little while.
Oh, God.
That's another good one.
That's
huh?
a great one.
That's a great
got any more?
Oh, just.
No, that's it?
No, that's it.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks for that.
Oh, look at it. I didn't see this.
Thanks for that. Yes.
Did you see this?
What, the Rockies
Chargers
events?
Chargers get Chambers from Miami.
Oh, yes.
Chris Chambers.
Oh, I did not see that.
Our upcoming opponent traded
All right.
to the Chargers.
Well, we did talk about the trading deadline a little bit earlier, right. And so that apparently is just now breaking, that the San Diego Chargers are picking up Chris Chambers from Miami.
Now, do we take that to mean, obviously, the Chargers are in need of wide receivers. I think we've known that. That's definitely a weakness.
Right.
And do we see this as a sign? And I don't know what Chris Chambers' contract status was, if he was, you know, due to be a free agent. It's not like this is like baseball where, you know, if you're a bad team and you're an upcoming free agent, you're probably getting traded. It's not quite like that in football. But, you know, is this just a sign that the Dolphins are saying, oh, wait,
we're waving
not too
the white
far
flag.
Away,
yeah.
right? Let's just gear up
We're waving
that.
The white flag. All
and
right.
Depending, I mean, you know, I'm not, Chambers is a pretty solid wide receiver. I'm not sure what they were able to get for him. But
here's the bulletin from ESPN. It says, San Diego looking for more offensive firepower, acquire Chris Chambers from the Dolphins, according to John Clayton. Terms of the deal not immediately known, but
Never.
The Dolphins and Chargers are expected to make the announcement before the deadline in approximately 34 minutes, which is 4 o'clock Eastern time. We talked about that in the opening hour. Chambers, of course, made the Pro Bowl in 05, has been held without a touchdown in 2007 so far for the winless Dolphins. 405 career receptions with 43 touchdowns for almost 5,700 yards. So they don't say just yet what the Chargers would be giving up.
Mm-hmm. So the Patriots miss out on Chris Chambers. They didn't see him when they played San Diego, and they won't be seeing him as they play Miami. And Dolphins only score now 10 points instead of 17. I don't know.
Wow.
But
wow, you got to wonder what that's all about.
And you were calling that you were calling the Dolphins situation what before we even found this news out?
A cluster bleep.
A cluster bleep. So yeah. That hasn't changed in the last 5 minutes.
We opened up today, Bilo, by basically just talking a little bit about the FU touchdown on Sunday.
Yeah.
Which I got a particular good kick out of from Bill Simmons' column on ESPN.com. And really was. And I said, I think you can take it a step further. I think the Cowboy game was the FU game.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways that, you know, the Patriots are pretty good about keeping their mouths shut from Monday to Saturday. And things last week like the Terrell Owens note, the Wade Phillips alleged comments, you're not going to hear the Patriots say anything about him until about 7:30 Sunday night. When
Kyle Echol goes over on fourth and one with 19 seconds left.
And when there wasn't a popcorn kernel left in Texas Stadium because they were all consumed by the Patriots. And I got no problem with it. But I think this was definitely a game that quietly as the leading up into the week leading up to it, the Patriots were targeting this game as a statement game, a let's shut up those guys from Dallas kind of game. And we didn't really know that how much how much of a factor that was for them during the week. But all you need to know was the popcorn. There was a lot of popcorn, and that was the TO catchphrase: "Get your popcorn ready." Well, the Patriots made sure that they had their popcorn and much more ready, and they did. You know, as far
did
as
you get any shots of them eating the popcorn in the locker room,
we did get some shots of them eating popcorn. And
good.
Now, at the time of the Kyle Echol touchdown and that pretty much that whole drive, I was in the bowels of Texas Stadium deep down, and actually the only TV that was near us, and a few other reporters also had this predicament, was in a little room that was actually the mascots' locker room.
Right.
Well, when the door was open and some reporters were looking at the TV, and then the mascot came in, the mascot wanted none of it, went into the room, closed the door. We were left without a TV to watch the final suspenseful moments of this game.
So you didn't get to see the FU touchdown.
No, but I am aware of the FU touchdown and all that. I mean, look, you know, first of all, it's the pros, and I've never, and maybe it's because I've never been in the locker room as a player or coach, you know, all the etiquette and all that, do you, don't you? I mean, is it better to take a knee? Is it better to run the ball? Obviously, kicking a field goal would have been, you know, even worse, because that it's like, you know, we really are trying, at least with a run, it's like, all right, well, maybe we just get no point. You know, maybe it's just a run for no gain or a run for a loss with a field goal when at the 1 yard line. I mean, that's putting points on the board. Yeah, I don't have much of a problem. I mean, it's the pros. You're trying to score. You know, you got a running back in there, you know, his first career touchdown. I mean, I don't have much of a problem with it. I don't know how much of a problem the Cowboys really had. I mean, it was so late in the game that it wasn't like, you know, they had an opportunity to get back in there and, fight back. I don't know. I mean, what's your take on it, John?
No, I absolutely think that's what it was. It was an emphasis that they wanted to put home a point. They wanted to drive home a point the whole game, and I think they just used that, you know, singular moment as the exclamation point.
In the sense that, in the sense of asking the question, did they need those points to secure a win?
Of course not.
Absolutely not. So in that sense, yeah, it was not a close, tight game where they felt, you know what, well, if we do the math here and there's 19 seconds left, well,
no,
the Cowboys could march
it
down.
It was a message being sent is what it was.
It was a message. And I don't think, you know, I certainly didn't realize as the week was going on, as I said just a little while ago, just how much the Patriots wanted to use this game as a statement game. But we got a sense of it once the game ended. And I think they definitely were a little, ticked at some of the things that the Cowboys were talking about.
Right.
Sure.
We'll bring you details of the Chris Chambers moving on to San Diego if they're made available to us prior to 4 p.m. Eastern time. In the meantime, I don't know if you saw this item that actually appeared yesterday, but Trent Green of the Miami Dolphins said on his radio show on WQAM in Miami yesterday that he hopes to play again. His quote was, "Right now my mindset is to come back and play. Everything has been real positive up to this point. That has given me great reassurance and given my family great reassurance." Of course, then again, the concussion that he was diagnosed to have was diagnosed as one of the most severe types that you can have.
I mean,
so I don't understand the logic of this. Maybe his brain is still rattled. He's been sidelined, of course, since last week, October the 7th, he has undergone tests since then in both Kansas City and in South Florida. And he says, "Everything turned out normal. I wasn't having any symptoms in terms of dizziness or headaches or memory loss or balancing problems or sensitivity to light, things that are associated with concussions." So,
well, I saw this line somewhere. "The best sign that he has no ill effects on his brain from these concussions is if he does decide to retire, because then he's making a smart move."
Yeah.
I don't think it makes any sense for him to come back. For a lot of reasons. Number one is his health and safety. I mean, he's had two extremely publicized, brutal concussions in the last 13 months, was it? It was
right.
Week one last year.
Right.
And who knows how many others he's had, but these two were pretty bad. And, you know, at 37, it's easy for me to say, but is it worth it to come back to an 0-6 team that's got no, you know, pretty much no hope for this year? Your coach is already hinting at the fact that he might not put him in if he decides to come back out of, you know, precautionary reasons for his own health. I mean, it doesn't seem, from my vantage point, and I think from, you know, from the vantage point for a second-round pick, Chris Chambers.
There it is.
Are you
going
to go to a team, is Trent Green going to go back to a team that's just giving away, I mean, a second-round pick is pretty good, but, you know, just losing all their offensive skill position players? You know, it just doesn't make sense for him to come back. I hope, and I think the smart move would be call it a career, and not a bad one at that. You know, the play last week where he got this concussion was kind of a fluky. It was in a way a fluky play. It wasn't, you know, you think about quarterbacks getting concussions by either, you know, running with the ball and diving head first foolishly, or getting sacked and the head hitting the ground. I mean, this was the quarterback going for a block. Whether it was a stupid, foolish, dirty play. I mean, that's a separate topic, but. You know, these kinds of things can happen. There's too much of a risk of it happening. I don't think he should come back. It would be best for him to retire.
Most people would agree with you. Again, the Chargers getting Chris Chambers from Miami in exchange for a second-round draft pick.
They're loading up on those second-round picks in exchange for wide receivers. Wes Welker, coming here in the offseason, they got a second-round pick, and I assume that was a second-round pick this past year already. They've already used that.
So that'll be... two or three second-round pick. I don't know if they kept their own from the second.
No. I'm saying the one for Welker was in the draft that already happened.
I see.
So this would be another second-rounder they're getting. It's a sad state of affairs down there in Miami, especially when you consider going into the 2006 season, they had high hopes. You know, second year of Saban.
Sure.
They bring in Culpepper, and there was reason for optimism there. Their defense perennially is pretty good, and wow, has it just gone downhill for them? And
it's been a bit of a surprise.
And are they the worst? Is it? It's between Miami and St. Louis, worst team in the NFL
right now. They're the two 0-6 teams.
I don't think if you polled Miami fans before this season, if they thought that question would be asked in Week 7, I don't think so.
All.
I'm sure they're gearing up for this game, though, coming up. This is their Super Bowl, obviously,
and
a lot of teams.
And I mentioned off the top that, regardless of how you think the Patriots should be favored and how much you think they should win by and this and that, I think history tells you that this has always been a tough game for the Patriots to play. I certainly would expect, Sunday to really be no different, although I think eventually the Patriots will wear them down. I think it's pretty clear to see that a lot of teams have done that to Miami this year. So do I think the Dolphins will win the game on Sunday? No, I don't. But I would not be surprised if it stays closer than most people expect for an extended period of time. In other words, it wouldn't shock me to see this still be a game in the third quarter.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, because I still think that there are some the Patriots offense, as we've talked about week in, week out, is far different from any offense that they've had under Tom Brady, under Bill Belichick. It just is. And every time they play even these division opponents, every time they play a team that they've already played, you can't make predictions on the game based on how they've done in the past. So there are some different elements. But Miami still has a defense and some defensive players who have caused the Patriots' offense, including most definitely Matt Light and Tom Brady, more trouble than any other team. So you still have to factor that in. Their offense doesn't scare the Patriots and shouldn't. But I can see it almost being as the Patriots were against, Buffalo, Cleveland, not necessarily blowing a team out in the first half.
Right.
And you're right. I think it could still be a game, but I think ultimately, it'll still be score-wise, it'll be almost like this was with Dallas, 21-point win. They've lost, two of their last three down there and three of their last five, I think it is, and they had a pretty long losing streak, in their 90s also down in Miami. Not a fun place for them to play.
No.
So last year, last December,
definitely.
21-0, no one expected that, I don't think.
No. In the opening hour, we talked a little bit about, in fact, the tail end of the first part of this hour as well, tail end of last hour, talking about how dominant the Patriots have been, and used some numbers that Cold Hard Football Facts had provided, and also we got from Eddie Epstein's book, Dominance, and that even the Patriots are on a pace right now to be perhaps the most dominant team of all time in NFL history, if they keep up the current numbers. Even if you throw in a couple of losses and have what they've done at this point in time and average it out over the whole year, they still end up as one of the top five teams of all time. That's how dominant this Patriot team has been to this point in time. So what I wanted to do also, Brian, is just take a look at some of the individual accomplishments from this last week against the Cowboys, and at least talk about it in regards to, you know, where it ranks in Patriots history and some of the individual performances we've had. By the way, our question of the day, email-wise, was because this is the opening day, opening week of Pro Bowl voting on NFL.com.
Yes, that's right.
I want you to pick three on offense and three on defense, and you can only pick three.
That's a tough one.
You can't. Well, that's why I said it.
Yeah, sure,
because
sure.
Largely, over the last few years, fans complained that this is where the Patriots get snubbed in Pro Bowl voting. So I'm going to give you, you know, I wanted fans to have a chance today to, all right, have your voice heard. So through 6 weeks now, who is most deserving? I'll let you tackle that one first.
Sure. Right now.
Yeah, go for it.
Well,
three offense, three defense.
Well, you know, the quarterback is the preeminent obvious one, and the wide receiver is, you know, is as well. I think we know who we're talking about there, Moss. It's hard to, you know, for number three, and, you know, part of this, which I can't do right now, is, you know, be able to analyze exactly the other candidates in the league, you know, throwing this at me as you just did, John, you know, and having me come up with it right off the bat. You're going to have to bear with me here. How do you not take a player on the Patriots offensive line? How do you not?
Well, that was,
how do you not? Dude,
I've been going back and forth with some of the fans, and while I think the overall consensus here is to say Brady, Moss, Welker, I left Welker off my list, and I put on Matt Light. I had another emailer come on and say they thought Logan Mankins deserved to go.
How do you not take a guy on the offensive line?
I'm
not smart enough, and I'd love to get Dante Scarnecchia to come down and have this next segment with us to pinpoint which guy on the offensive line is Pro Bowl worthy at the expense of someone else. I think Matt Light's a great candidate. He's gone up against some guys who, you know, we know that they've had trouble with in the past and perform pretty well. I think Logan Mankins, if you ask Bill Belichick, and he has been asked about this year and in the past, he considers Logan Mankins to be the most dependable, consistent guy on that team. And what Belichick says, and I find this sort of a fascinating comment, and I'm pretty sure he said it about Logan Mankins, and he said it in the past as well, he'd rather have a guy who's, say, a B or B-plus average player, but that's exactly what you know you're going to get out of that player day in, day out, play in, play out, than have a guy who's A-plus one day, C-minus the next day, A-plus one day, F the next day, where the ability to be spectacular, but you just don't know what you're going to get day in and day out. And I think that's where he considers Logan Mankins to be.
I never said that.
Oh, man, you're right, Gary. He didn't. He didn't say that. Who am I thinking of? Who am I thinking of? Was it Wade Phillips? Maybe Wade Phillips said that.
Maybe.
So I would have to say that Mankins is. I'm the wrong guy to ask when it comes to, well, why is Logan Mankins a Pro Bowl player? What technique-wise does he do? I'm just not your guy to analyze that. But I'd have to say that Light or Mankins would be your guy. One of those two would be your guy.
Okay. I'll buy that.
So I'll go, you know what, I'll go Brady, Moss, Mankins, you know, for the offensive line, for the offensive three.
Okay.
You know, defensively, boy, that's an interesting one.
I think that's an even tougher choice, to be honest.
That is a tougher choice. You know, I think Adalis Thomas is the one, and what's definitely impressive about him is he's had some standout plays, like his interception return and some great tackles. But, you know, he has the ability to maneuver. You know, he's so fast and quick in coverage, and I think there's a lot of plays out there that don't necessarily show up on the stat sheet that are noticeable with him. I'd probably go with him. I think Vince Wilfork is having a Pro Bowl year, and you know, the fact that he hasn't necessarily had Richard Seymour to one side of him, you know, he's had Jarvis Green, a little bit of Mike Wright. I don't think he's missed a beat, and you know that now that he's in his fourth year, teams understand that they have to pay much, much closer attention to him. So I you know, you got to go with those two. And you know, I think Asante Samuel's having a pretty good year. I don't know if it's a Pro Bowl year yet at this point, but he's on a pretty good pace here. You know, maybe those are my three, but I may revisit that.
Okay.
I may revisit that.
All right, let's get a couple more emailers in here and see what they think. Brian sends this one. He says, on offense, Brady, Moss, Matt Light. Mm-hmm. I agree with Welker being really great, but like you, I think if you have to cut someone from Matt, it is him.
And it's also hard if you start considering it in terms of, like, you know, there's obviously two different questions when you're talking about Pro Bowl.
Right.
Who deserves it? Who's actually going to get it? And when you start considering the fact that there might not be a better team than the Patriots, but there might be better wide receivers
That's
out there.
That's true.
Who, at the end of the day, so Wes Welker, at the end of the day, might very well have Pro Bowl-worthy stats, but he's not going to get in part because other guys are going to have similar stats,
right.
And it's still there's still that mentality of, well, who's Wes Welker?
But you know what, though? If he continues to have, you know, even where anywhere close to the kind of game he had this last week, he'll
right.
be on it. He'll earn his way on it.
Statistically, he's going to be right up there. And he's going to, you know, he if he does keep this pace, he will have Pro Bowl-worthy numbers. You know, there's always at different positions guys who right. get there based on history and as opposed to merit and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's different factors there. But, I you know, Welker, absolutely. You know, Benjamin Watson, if he's healthy and, you know, he went down with an injury the other day, I think he's going to have Pro Bowl-worthy numbers at tight end. It's not like there's all that many tight ends out there who end up having, you know, Pro Bowl worthy stats, and unfortunately, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, it's the stats that mm-hmm. end up getting you there. Like Kyle Brady might be having a Pro Bowl year. I mean, he's doing a great job in blocking. I think he's been an important part of this offense. He's not making the Pro Bowl though.
Right.
He has one, you know, two catches for you know, 6 yards and a touchdown, something like that.
Brian in San Francisco then adds on D. I've got Thomas, Will Fork. He says Warren or Vrabel or maybe even Junior if he keeps making big impact plays on defense. But you got to ask. You can only go three, Brian, and you list five. So, you know, you're cheating there. I think of those, I'd have to agree with Thomas, Will Fork, and I think I'm going to go with Ty Warren, although Asante Samuel's also beginning to make a case.
He is. He's, you know, he's got the picks. You know, he's doing, I think – maybe not the most consistent job. I mean, he and the secondary have had their ups and downs, but I think he's having a pretty good year. And I think, like I just said about guys maybe not always getting there on merit, but on history, I think if he gets there, it'll be on merit. But what he did last year, having the year that he had, is going to help. And even though he didn't make the Pro Bowl, is going to help his
right.
total cachet.
Andy in Vermont. Brady, Moss, Welker on offense. Will Fork, Samuel, Seau on defense.
Yeah, you know, Seau, I mean, for a part-time player, and I don't say that as a knock on him, he's 40 years old, he's having a pretty good year, and he's so active out there. He really is. He just doesn't act his age out there. And I think he's not going to be Pro Bowl-worthy, but and the fact that he has three interceptions
mm-hmm.
is kind of a fluke.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it.
Well,
it's, you know,
but
you
he's put himself,
get him.
Here's the thing,
him, you know.
He's put himself in position to make
right.
the plays.
Right. Put himself in position. I mean, and you know, I say that, and he, you know, one of the interceptions he had against Cleveland was tipped by someone else. Well, the one I think that Asante Samuel had against Cleveland was tipped by Seau, so it kind of balances out. No, he's
right.
having a good year. He's having a more of an impact than I think you could ever expect him to have had.
Vince from Pennsylvania says on offense, Tom Brady, Randy Moss, Logan Mankins. So he agrees with you. Defense, Ty Warren, Asante Samuel, Roosevelt, Colvin.
Flashy. He hasn't had a bad year. I don't think he's a Pro Bowl year.
So far. Doesn't
so
mean
far,
he won't
right.
have
well,
one. We keep in mind now, this is six
well,
weeks. This is
so
a,
far.
This is a six-week
right.
beginning of season, dominant
right.
New England Patriot
right.
team snapshot.
Right.
That's
and,
all it is a snapshot.
Right. And so far, Wes Welker might have Pro Bowl numbers, but what if he tails off?
Right.
It goes both ways.
It's
you know,
absolutely true.
You know, I don't think... you know, I don't think. Let's see who here. I don't think Jabbar Gaffney's having a Pro Bowl year, but things could change. I don't think Kyle Eckel's having a Pro Bowl year, but things could change.
Mr. Grodecki, I think, would vote for Benjamin Watson on offense. Watson right now is ranked 7th.
I'm simply league. Providing stats.
He's providing some numbers here on Mr. Watson specifically, where Antonio Gates leads everybody in the world with 43 catches
right.
for a tight end. Watson's got 18, which ranks him 7th overall in the league in tight ends.
Well, Antonio Gates is there. I mean, he would need to get hurt or have, you know, a complete drop-off in production to not be there in the AFC. And I think Tony Gonzalez, I don't know what his full stats are. I don't know.
38 receptions,
so that,
three touchdowns. Of course, he set
he
the record,
set record
for touchdowns.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think, you know, I mean, you got it's tough to crack that Pro Bowl situation in the AFC right now. But Watson, you know, what did you say? He's 7th in tight
seventh,
ends.
7th in receptions.
In the league or in the AFC?
Actually, it's in the AFC. As I'm
That's in the
at.
AFC?
Yeah.
Well, I would have thought he'd be higher than that, but his touchdowns per catch are probably pretty good. How many touchdowns
Yeah, he's got
he
five touchdowns.
Five touchdowns. So.
Which is tied for the league lead amongst tight ends with Dallas Clark.
Yeah. So, and, you know, I mean, Dallas Clark is another one to worry about. You know, Dallas Clark is having a
Kellen
having a
Winslow's
year.
Having a pretty
Kellen
good
Winslow.
Year.
So it's tough to crack that tight end. You know, like I said, he might end up with Pro Bowl type numbers.
Depends on his numbers.
Right.
Okay, here we go. Scott from Washington, D.C. Says, regarding Pro Bowl voting for the Patriots, on offense, I'd say Tom Brady, Randy Moss, Logan Mankins. Logan's just flat-out crushing defenders and looks great on screens, getting downfield very well. I might have said Copen, but he missed time with an injury, and we're just going off what we know today after week six. Okay, good. Benjamin Watson deserves to be in the conversation, too, but I'm going with Brady, Moss, and an offensive lineman. With as little as Brady has been hit or even rushed, someone from this O-line has to get a nod. I think we're all in agreement where that's concerned.
Yeah.
On defense, I'd say Vince Wilfork, Ty Warren, and Mike Vrabel. I have no argument that Sayo is having an amazing year. I just think he plays in too much of a rotation, whereas Vrabel plays an amazing number of snaps and does so at a very high level. Hat tip to Mike Reese for his weekly update on the number of plays played by each player. And that's a good point and a good addition by Mike Reese as well, because Vrabel is in on an extraordinary amount of snaps, you know, whether it's defense or on offense as a tight end. You know, as a decoy, which he served, you know, in the game against the Cowboys on Sunday.
Yep.
The guy's on the field for a huge number of plays, so you're probably right. Maybe he does deserve the recognition.
No, that's a great, and those stats on number of snaps is amazing. And back to the offense, I've been amazed at how many snaps Randy Moss, I should say, I was amazed at first, those first couple weeks, how many snaps he's been in the game. And he's been around about 90 to 95% of the Patriots' offensive snaps week in and week out, which based on what we knew going into the regular season, he didn't play in the preseason at all, hadn't played a single game where you actually put the uniform on and you're in there with the offense with Tom Brady. How many snaps he has played has been staggering. Staggering for any player, let alone what we knew going into the season. It's been really remarkable.
Says, do we have to stop there, though? Can't we add a vote for special teams and try to get old man Izzo into one more Pro Bowl? Actually, in all seriousness, Kelly Washington was making a solid case for himself with some very noticeable special teams tackles before he got hurt and missed some time. He's back now, and it shows. The kid can fly, and I'm impressed he's been willing to work hard on special teams, which is probably what won him a roster spot over Rishay Caldwell. Good point.
Yeah, absolutely. One of them a roster spot. You know, Kelly Washington, Eric Alexander, Pierre Woods. I mean, Heath Evans. They've got some guys who are standing out pretty well in Pro Bowl. On special teams. I'm thinking that Chris Hansen doesn't have a real good shot at getting to the Pro Bowl.
That would be my guess too.
The Patriots are 32nd out of 32 in
net
one
punting?
Of the, in either net or gross punting average. Yeah,
probably gross, but maybe net too.
Yeah, it may be. I think
it's gross. All right,
it is gross. You're right.
Okay, there's your nitpick for Nitpick Tuesday. We're dead last in the league in gross punting yardage.
Right.
Okay. Patrick in Beverly, Massachusetts says, my Pro Bowl picks. Offense, Tom Brady, Randy Moss, and a surprise pick, Wes Welker. Defense, Adalys Thomas, Ty Warren, Vince Wilfork. Also, please address the following issue. Randy Moss caught a pass in the end zone, had control, then fell on his back, and the ball rolled about but never hit the ground. I thought the ground could not cause a fumble. Also, once the player is completely out of bounds, isn't the play over? Then he regained control, so when does the clock stop on controlling the ball? You know the play that in which he's referring, right?
Well, I know the play.
It was an unbelievable catch by Moss that was ultimately ruled out of bounds in the end zone.
Ruled that he never had possession.
Never had really possession of the ball. The feet were down, but that he never had control of the ball and was never had control of the ball while he was in play.
Exactly. And at first, you're looking at the replays, you're watching it. It became clear that it was clear at first that, boy, his feet are in bounds. What a grab. They're not going to be able to overturn this. And then you see one replay where he definitely didn't have the ball. I think I saw an explanation, which was that he had to have possession before hitting the ground. Well, I did see an explanation, NFL Network or something like that. I don't know if I can explain it correctly, but it seemed like it was the correct call, and I think they got that right.
Well, to the emailer's point, I also thought at the time while I was watching the play, I said, you know, well, as long as he had control of the ball while he's in bounds, once he goes out, that doesn't make any difference. Once the ball crosses the plane of the end zone, it's a touchdown, but the ball has to be controlled. So I didn't think that they could overrule that based on the evidence that they had on the video replay. I didn't realize that, you know, ultimately what they decided when they say that he didn't have control of the ball on the way down is that he didn't have control of the ball, period.
Right, and I think that's true. I think that's the way I saw it as well. I don't think he did. It looked at at first on most
hard to argue
it
against
like
it. I just thought that maybe based on the original call, which was touchdown, they didn't have enough definitive evidence to overturn it.
Right.
Obviously, they
yeah,
saw
I didn't think they had enough definitive evidence to overturn the feet in bounds. I think that was proved correct.
But I don't think that's what the issue was.
That wasn't what the issue was.
No.
Yeah, everyone thought it was at first.
Gabe in Newtown, Pennsylvania. John, I still remember the 85 Bears and that haunting Buddy Ryan 46D. They were destroying teams left and right. And when they started utilizing the fridge at the goal line, it just gave me that churning feeling in my stomach. Of course, you know they were 15-1. That one, coincidentally, was the Dolphins to keep their perfect season record intact on a tipped pass that went for a touchdown late in that game, if I remember. And I still have nightmares, obviously, about Super Bowl 20. I still think Grogan should have started that game instead of Eason. The other question I was asking was, what is the one dominant team? When I went through the list of the top 10 dominant teams of all time in NFL history based on Eddie Epstein's book, what's the one team that you remember as being dominant, you know, growing up following the NFL? And the answer that I personally gave was the 79 Steelers, because they were the Cowboys' nemesis. Mm-hmm. You know, Cowboys were, you know, they were fricked to their frack.
Yeah.
And so that was the one dominant team that I remember as being particularly, you know, unbeatable, you know, for an amount of time, even though that year those Steelers were 12-4. But you still thought of them as a dominant team.
Yeah.
And so he goes with the 85 Bears. Gabe says, now I know during Peyton Manning's record 49 touchdown year a few years back, he had three receivers that had 10 touchdowns each and 1,000 yards each. Can you see any of the three Patriots receivers matching that record besides Moss?
Getting to 100, what was it, 1,000?
10 touchdowns and 1,000 yards.
And 1,000 yards. Well, you know, certainly Moss is on that pace, and I think
Welker could be.
Welker is on pace. He's got three touchdowns, so he's probably right about an eight-touchdown pace.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the yardage, he is at somewhere in the 400, low fours maybe neighborhood.
Yeah, he's still on pace.
I mean, Moss has 600-something yards already,
yeah.
So he's on pace. And, you know, I mean,
where is Stallworth yardage-wise? I didn't look at the stats.
Well, he's only in the low threes, in the mid, low to mid threes.
Because
right,
Watson's
believe.
At 222, and I thought he was still a ways away.
Yeah, Watson. Yeah. Well, Stallworth, the last 2 weeks, he's had about 175 yards total. I think he had 100 and, what did he have this past week? 136,
mm-hmm.
And he had around 50, I think, last week, 50, 60. So I don't think he's at 300 yet. He's ahead of Watson, I think.
Okay.
Watson's had a lot of bang for the buck. Watson's had a lot of bang for the buck, whereas Stallworth, those first couple weeks, he didn't necessarily reach the end zone, but he, you know, he caught a few passes here and there. So, you know, there's an outside chance at that, but that's a tough one for all three to keep up the pace, or three of those four to keep up the pace. You know, one or two maybe.
Especially
would.
When you're in an offense predicated on spreading the ball around and finding different receivers. All right, here's
exactly.
The numbers. Thank you, Gary. Moss at 6'10", Welker's at 386, Stallworth at 316.
Okay, so Stallworth is over 300. All right.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the pace, if you're at 300 6 weeks in, you know, if you're not at a 1,000-yard pace.
No. You'd have to be at about three – you'd have to be right where Welker is.
Well, if you're – yeah, you'd have to be – yeah, that's probably right about a 1,000-yard pace.
Yeah, so
right
800 –
yeah,
we're close to 400 yards. So
yeah.
Welker's probably right on the edge of the 1,000-yard pace.
Yep.
Moss is definitely on it.
Yeah.
How many receivers in the AFC then would be on a 1,000-yard pace? You know, let's see, Chad Johnson, Jericho Cotchery, Chris Chambers was. Well, he still is, I guess.
Right, he's still in the AFC.
Chambers, 415 yards, 31 receptions, but no touchdowns, as we talked about, before getting traded today.
Probably a function of the overall offense.
Braylon Edwards is. Reggie Wayne, barely. Brandon Marshall, maybe barely. Dwayne Bowe, Kansas City, yep, he's on pace. Stallworth is probably on the outside looking in at 316. So you've probably got about 10 receivers that are on 1,000-yard paces, two of them Patriots right now, with Stallworth just on the other side of that. Let's just see if we can sneak in a few more emails before the top of the hour. Alex, all right, Patriots Pro Bowlers. Brady, Moss, Light on defense, Warren, Vrabel, Thomas. From what I read, the most dominant team was the Jim Brown Cleveland Browns, but my vote goes to the 85 Bears. Not only were they dominant but scary, as for the Patriots teams, I would choose the 04 team.
Yeah, I think I'd agree on the
Patriots. Of the three, yes, the 04 team was the best.
The one that going into the season, they were on the long winning streak. And they
Correct. Maintained. That was the best of the three Patriots teams so far.
Yeah.
Last season, when Romo was struggling, Dan Patrick said that maybe he wasn't the next Troy Aikman. Maybe he was Danny White. Is that a fair assessment?
Ooh.
Well, I happen to think Danny White was a pretty good quarterback. I don't think he got really the due that he was due. But I, you know, don't know if that's a fair assessment. No,
it could be something in between.
Something in between would be about right. Jimmy in Orlando. I'd have to say the 85 Bears were dominant and brought the showbiz to the game with their song. God, I hated them, but they were the best Bear team of all time in my eyes. They had a great defense. Sorry, Dick Butkus, you were before my time, but now, of course, is the Pats dominating to date. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go with Pat Pratt, who sends this one from Germantown, Maryland, or actually from Washington, D.C. today. Says, John, I honestly have been watching football within a 20-year span. My original team is San Francisco. I never really got to watch Joe Montana's Super Bowl runs with them as I was too young. However, I do think that the 49ers team of 94 that won the Super Bowl and finally defeated the Cowboys was a stacked team with talent. It had many Pro Bowl players, Jerry Rice, Steve Young, Ricky Waters, Brent Jones, Ken Norton, John Taylor, Deion Sanders, Merton Hanks, Tim McDonald. Wow. This Patriot team reminds me of that 49ers team as they are talented and clicking on all cylinders with the talent they have gathered. I love the Patriots because they represent an old-school fashion of playing textbook football with tons of weapons at their disposal. Hope you see this comparison as a legitimate one. Yeah, I think that's a very good comparison.
And
94-49ers.
And
yeah.
Niners-Cowboys at that time was a pretty good rivalry.
Great rivalry in the NFC.
Interconference.
Like you got
the
with
same.
The Patriots and the Colts going now in the AFC.
That's what I was going to say. You know, I think there might be some similarities there that they're not in the same division, but they end up playing just about every year because they're that good. They win their divisions and kind of goes back and forth. You know, might be seeing something like that.
Absolutely. Pratt, great email. I totally agree with it. Andy in Vermont chimes back in with the 85 Bears, even though I'm not a fan of the Bears, and they blew out our Patriots in that awful Super Bowl loss. Says, most dominant team I remember up till this season. And then one more from Jimmy who says, not to state the obvious, but the Chargers are coming back and loading up for the Patriots. We will see them again. On another note, I'm not so concerned about the Colts this year. I have the Steelers on my radar. What's your thoughts on Big Ben and his defense?
I still think that the Steelers are going to prove to be average. And maybe, you know,
I'm still not sold on them either.
I'm not sold on them. And I think that the Chargers, there's a good chance that, you know, we see them at the end. And you know, the fact that, you know, you got to look at some of these divisions and it's like, well, who else? I mean, if you look at the Chargers, you know, are the Chiefs going to maintain a they're at 500, but, you know, you figure it's going to be better than 500 that wins that division. The Broncos clearly can't compete with the Chargers, and the Raiders aren't there yet either. And, you know, so I think the Chargers, that's a great move. And the more I think about it, I'm pretty sure they have a bye this weekend. So that's, you know, an extra week that they can get Chris Chambers, you know, acclimated, to this offense.
Well, adding Chris Chambers to the mix is going to make him better because that was one of the criticisms we talked about in the week leading up to the game here
absolutely.
And talked about afterwards. They don't have any difference makers at wide receiver.
Right. They've got the best running back and the best tight end. And, you know, the fact that you have those two. But the thing is, those two, Tomlinson and Gates, pretty much every year, they lead the Chargers in receptions. They don't have a wide receiver in the top two in receptions. At least they didn't last year. And I got to imagine they don't really this year. So that's got to make them better. And if they can use this bye week to get him acclimated, that could be a scary offense.
All right. You want a quick update on Patriots today?
Absolutely. We're still talking about the game against the Cowboys, going a little more in-depth on Randy Moss and sort of what we were talking about, his, you know, the pace that he's on this year, and touching a little bit on the way the Patriots were able to get by without Jason Witten absolutely destroying them. He only had one sequence where he had three catches in a row on a scoring drive, didn't catch another ball the rest of the game. And I sit down with Paul Perillo and talk a little bit about the game and, a little bit about this upcoming game. Gary, what
boring.
You got? There you go. Of course. Of course. Well,
but not to Patriots fans.
No, it's Perillo.
Right. And by the way, if you watch today's Patriots today and every day, you can see Christina Acra.
Oh, well, that's worth the price of admission, right?
Boring, Gary?
Okay.
There you go.
This website, Patriots Today. Thanks, Peter.
Very website. Thank you.
All right. We'll be back here again tomorrow. Same Pats time, same Pats channel. We'll have probably some locker room. We'll have conference calls with the Miami Dolphins. And who knows, maybe a special surprise or two. The Pats get ready for the Fins. Squish the fish.